Welcome to the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Josiah Smelser. The Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast is the shared journey of building a real estate investment property business from square one. Join me as we learn together how to conquer the real estate game to reach financial freedom. Together, we will learn from people in all areas of real estate and business in our personal trek towards escaping the rat race. Be you. Do the work you love. Play the long game. Before we get going, make sure you're subscribed to the show on whatever audio platform you're using and jump over on YouTube and subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Daily Real Estate Investor. We have shorts coming out daily as well as these podcast episodes on video.
Welcome back to the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. This is your host, Tony Moreno, and here with me, we have a wonderful, brilliant Miss Alicia Merriman. How are you, Alicia?
I am doing good. Hi, everyone.
So Leash is actually, she was my mentor, or she still is my mentor, when it comes to short-term rentals. And I feel like you guys are going to have great value today with all the tips that she's given me in the past and that she's going to give to you guys in a second. Today, if you notice, Josiah is not here today. So Josiah will not be joining us today in the podcast because he had something to attend to. But hey, you guys have me. So, so Leash, let's go ahead and share with our listeners a little bit about yourself so they can get to know you.
All right. So my name is Alicia Merriman. I have been investing mostly in and around the Huntsville, Alabama area. For those of you who don't have like relevance, that's the northern portion of Alabama. It's actually where I live, and it just so happens to be a wonderful place to invest as well. But I have been on my real estate journey since I was 18 years old. I started out flipping houses. Yep. And I still flip houses. That's not what I would consider my breadwinning anymore, but it is one of the exit strategies that I choose to use. And I'm 33 now, so I've been doing this for a hot minute. I have really carved out a niche in optimizing short-term rentals. And so instead of me flipping houses, so I normally buy about one house per month. Oh. And that wasn't the case before I became a wife and a mom. I was that psycho person that I was able to do two, three at one time, like buying them, right? So they're stacked. It was crazy. But I struck an agreement with my husband that no amount of money is worth my sanity. And so we started just buying one house per month, which is still a lot. You know, most people who call themselves real estate investors, they're truly only doing one, maybe two deals a year. That's been my experience from meeting people, right? And that's okay. I think that's a wonderful place to be because think about that. 40 years, that could be 80 doors, right? It's a beautiful thing. But of all the houses that we get, they have different exit strategies. I would say anywhere between two and four, probably a year, I keep a short-term rentals. And yeah, that little nest egg has now grown. And I leaned into the short-term rental market versus 12-month standard landlording, right? Mm-hmm. Because in the beginning, I was going from flipping, which had huge payouts, to cash flow, which was significantly less. So I needed to be in the market of what my family was used to, comparable amounts, right? So short-term rentals was able to provide pretty much 2x to 4x the rental income in the area. So being able to quadruple the local rents, it meant a lot to me. And then I realized I'm pretty good at this. I realized that lovingly, right? So people started seeing what was happening. They started seeing my portfolio grow. They started seeing the numbers and how many people were flooding to my properties, great reviews. And this thing just kind of grew and people started reaching out. I started having a lot of coffees with everyone. And lo and behold, I realized that I had solved a lot of problems that others hadn't in this business. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that I now am a short-term rental expert and I specialize and helping people automate their self-manage, if they're self-managing, help them automate mm-hmm. their
And we'll talk, and that's one of the things that we're going to touch on later on. So stay tuned to hear those, how to automate your short-term rental business. So let's real quick, let's define what is a short-term rental? Because you mentioned, you know, you'd rather do that instead of a 12-month lease. So for those that don't know, what do you define as a short-term rental versus the 12-month regular lease that normally you see in landlording?
Okay. So I will answer that question, but I want to give a little background knowledge. Like, let's start at square one for people, which is whenever I find a deal, so a property that could be a potential opportunity to make money in real estate, I always look for three items. Number one is the exit strategy, right? Is it going to be a flip? Is it going to be a short-term rental? Is it going to be a 12-month rental? What am I going to do with that property once I get it? Protection. What documents have to go into place so that I know that I'm protected in the best means possible? Attorneys don't know everything, right? So is that a quitclaim deed? Is it a limited power of attorney? What documents have to go into place? And then the last thing that I line up before I pull a trigger on a potential deal is exit strategy, protection, and then tax mitigation. How can I get out of this deal and pay Uncle Sam the least amount possible? Now, for clarity, tax mitigation is legal. Tax evasion is not. Okay. But I've learned that I really, really like pulling the trigger on the short-term rentals. Now, what is a short-term rental? So there's three different classifications for most rentals. So you're going to hear this referred to as short-term rental, which is going to be what a lot of people call Airbnb, VRBO, right? For most states, that is legally defined, the difference between tenant-landlord law, as 28 days or less. For most states, that's how they define it. A person who is staying for 28 days or less. And getting the reason that there's even categories is because anyone who stays 28 days or more, tenant landlord laws are enacted. They're present for those types of contracts, those types of lease agreements, right? And, you know, for those types of individuals who are staying the longer term, 28 days plus, there's going to be things that protect both parties, such as evictions, right? So maybe the shorter term stays, they have things like either ejections or they're just trespassing, right? They can just leave. So different laws follow different categories. But there's short-term rentals, 28 days and less. Mid-term rentals, which is your 28 days and more. It's often referred to as mid-term rentals, corporate rentals, extended stay rentals, right? And then lastly, standard 12-month landlords. So a lot of the same legal laws apply to both midterm rentals and standard landlords. But it just really depends on what you as the owner, the landlord, the host, how do you want to get out of that deal? Now, short-term rentals, I'm not going to lie to you, they have more management. This is why people don't want to get into them as quickly as they do the 12-month. But Ken, I have learned how to automate about 85 to 90% of all that management. There are beautiful tools that exist today. So artificial intelligence and applications, systems, they are concentrated labor. Yeah.
So I know my old personal home, I cash out refi because obviously back in 2020, 2021, the values went up a lot. And I cash out refi with that house. And the way that that house will still cash flow me, it will be with a short-term rental instead of having a 12-month lease. And that's the only short rental I have at the moment, which that was when I got your services for your mentorship. And obviously that house is doing great. And like you said, it involves more work, but with the automation tools that we'll discuss in a little bit, it has made life a lot easier. And now obviously that house is cash flowing really good. I believe if I kept it as a 12-month lease, it was going to cash flow me about $150 a month, which is not good for me. That's not in my criteria. However, if I did a short-term rental, it would be like $800 a month.
Yay.
So it was like a no brainer. So speaking of, speaking of short-term stays, 28 days or less versus having either a unique stay or having a corporate rental. Let's talk about the pros and cons for each of those three branches.
So short-term rentals, the national average for what someone brings home, so net, the spread, right, is it's by Priceonomics, and they were interviewing Airbnb's ambassador division. And essentially, it was published back in 2021 that the national average for what people actually brought home and earned was $924 a month. Okay. So that goes to show you that in the short-term space, if you're normally making $150 to $350, and for those of you who think your landlord's balling out of control, no, most 12-month landlords, after the cost of their mortgage, insurance, which has gone up a ton in places like Florida and Texas and Louisiana, right? Insurance, property tax and maintenance, those things, they are only, in most cases, yielding between $150 and $450. And $450 is on the high end, with my experience, with 12-month landlords. So short-term rentals, you can obviously make a lot more. And it is more manageable. I'm going to highly encourage everyone to try to source ways to automate that. But with things like corporate rentals, so what's the beauty of a corporate rental? Someone who's staying for 30, maybe 90 days, I would say I own a corporate housing company here in Huntsville. It's Corporate Housing Huntsville, LLC. You guys can look me up. Leave me a good review if you decide to come stay with me, right? But the beauty of the corporate rentals, so both are very similar. If you pull the metrics on airdna.co, MashVisor, and Rabu, R-A-B-B-U, if you pull the metrics of how will this property perform using those three sites, you're going to find out that midterm rentals and short-term rentals are closely related. The difference in the nightly rate, I find that people who book for 30 days or more, generally 30 to 90 days, you're going to collect as a host about 10 to 15% less on those reservations. But does it strike a balance? Absolutely. And how does it strike that balance? Like there's no part of making less per night that feels good. Well, compared to short-term rentals, you're not having to clean the property and pay for those cleaning costs, right? There is no cost of vacancy because you're not at like a 70 to 90% occupancy rate. They're staying 100%. They're staying 30 of the 30 days each month, right? You're not having to restock the property every turnover, supplying more paper towels and toilet paper. So in the short-term rental, I have massively excelled by helping others optimize their portfolio. I like both models. I love corporate rentals and short-term rentals. And guys, it's also seasonal. What do I mean by that? Both are the same. They're both similar models with similar exit strategies and similar numbers. So what stops you from taking the same house? Let's call it 123 Main Street. During the peak season, let's say spring, everyone's traveling, spring break, right? Summertime, this is just some areas. You've got other areas where it's not as so wonderful during the summer, like Florida, and I'll tell you why here in a second. But so what if you rode the wave? So during the summer, you took that same furnished rental and you made it a short-term rental during the peak season, right? Collected all that road through the fall where a lot of weddings happen, a lot of people are traveling for weddings. And then during the winter, what if you hedged your bet? And you took that same property that was normally a short-term rental and you made it a midterm rental. Well, you might be saying, who's my target market in midterm rentals? Business executives, solo travelers, right? Couples, elderly couples as well, traveling nurses, displaced insurance for insurance companies, displaced housing insurance, people who had a pipe burst in their property, right? Marketing companies, a lot of entertainment industry workers. So there's a huge home builders, people who are trying to place their clients in a temporary housing situation because their house sold and they're building a new house, right? There's a lot of opportunity in the corporate side of things. But you mentioned one that a lot of people might be like, man, what the heck was Anthony talking about? Unique spaces. So unique spaces are in the same category as short-term rental in most cases, yet the yield on unique spaces is insane. The national statistic is over $9,000 a month and what people bring home from unique state. Yes. Okay. So let me give you some tips about this. By the way, Anthony, we both live close to each other. I already own Huntsville Glamping. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. I started to look for LLC.
We can JV, right? So essentially, a unique experience is you're charging a premium. Maybe so $9,000 a month is a ton of money from one property. How many of you guys, raise your hand if you have ever paid $200 to $300 per night to stay at a place? Calculate that. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but $320 a night, let's say, 300 times an 80% occupancy, which is 24 nights a month. It's not hard to see now how they hit $9,000 a month. It's not hard at all. So what is a unique stay, though? I have a tiny house. So what we lovingly call wheel estate, right? It's literally on wheels. And where are opportunities to find tiny houses? Right now, there's a ton of them available on eBay. A lot of people during COVID, they parked them and they went back fearing they wouldn't be able to buy permanent residence. They hopped back in the market and they bought a permanent residence. So all those tiny houses that have been parked for 1, 2, 3 years right now are for sale. And you can find them mostly between $40,000 and $65,000. And you can go pick them up. You can have cross-country delivery for $5,000. Yeah, that was cheaper than what I had thought the quotes for cross-country delivery of a tiny house would be. But yeah, so essentially, tiny homes, I have an Airstream, right? It doesn't have to be all authentic Airstream either. You can gut it. You can make it its own like unique experience on the inside. I bought a Crusader bus that I didn't tell my husband about until afterwards. I was like, baby, you're not even going to notice it in the backyard. You won't even see it. It's 42-foot long, double-decker Crusader bus.
It's cool.
I know. Yeah, he noticed.
He was probably like, what? Yeah.
What? He's like, what is wrong with you? But things, even as simple as I've seen people rent hammocks. Three hammocks on three trees with a campfire in the middle and renting that for $40 a night. Most like $40 a night times a 24 night, 80% occupancy rate. Mm-hmm. That's not too bad for hammocks and a campfire, right? It's really, at that point, it's just how creative can you get? If you don't have the land for that, can you go lease land, right? And can you lease that land not based on a monthly rate, but instead on when you're booked, they get paid like a commission? You say, yeah, Mr. Land Owner, I'm going to give you, whatever, 10%, 5% commission of all my clearings, everything, my spread, right? And then during the slow season, you're not paying him, right? So unique stays, tree houses, yurts, dome houses, renting boat houses, like yachts and boat houses, right? There are tons of different things that you can put up for rent, and people will actually rent that stuff. But those are the unique properties that really, really have a high yield. Now, let me give you some personal advice about unique stays if you decide to go down that route. The number one performing unique stay that is also the easiest one to get, like to get permits for and to actually be allowed to be a permanent structure, A-frame homes. number one performing nationwide. The number two performing unique stay experience, which is a little bit harder to permit, are going to be, what are they called? The back of semi trucks? Shipping container homes. That's it. Shipping container homes. The big metal shipping containers, stacking those together and creating. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, that's way cheaper than conventional building. No, it's not. No, it's not.
Got to do a whole bunch of stuff to it.
Yeah, it's about exactly the same, honestly.
Yeah.
Because by the time that you have to call in all the welders, you have to restructure these shipping containers to make them sturdy by using, instead of using wood 2x4s, you're using metal beams, right? The costs end up being about the same. But your amount nightly is massively different than a standard rental because of what it is. But if you're going to create, build one of these unique experiences, make sure that you are at least within viewing distance of another property. You guys, I have never, I'm from Alabama, so it's not, it don't bother you very much either. But these city slickers will lose their mind when they're driving down this dark wooded driveway up into through the woods. So note to self, ideally it's within viewing distance of another home. Okay. That, and what's another interesting experience I've had? I've had a few, whatever it comes to.
Me and my wife, we just got back from a mini vacation, and it was a unique stay. They got really creative. So it was actually their backyard, similar to you.
Yeah.
And it was actually a surf shack is what they called it. And it's literally this 96 square foot place. And it's literally a tiny house. The bed was about 8 feet high from the couch area. And literally, that's where we stayed. And we paid, I think it was $347 a night. And we stayed for two nights. And it was literally their backyard. They had a little nice pool. They had a fireplace. And just for the, obviously, you know, just for that stay, the reason why we paid $347 was for the experience.
Yeah.
It was, you know, a unique stay. Just to do it and just to take a look at that beautiful space. So that anybody can get creative. If the zoning allows you, anybody can get creative and build something. And I just saw, this is another thing too. I saw a post on, I think it was Instagram. Home Depot is starting to sell these modular homes for $43,000, $45,000. And it includes the installation and everything. I was like, shoot.
Yeah. They'll even hold the financing on it.
Yes, it is crazy.
Your Home Depot card. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that is crazy. I mean, even manufacturers and big companies are seeing the opportunities here. So that's something for people to keep in mind. If you want to check that out, another genius idea that I never thought about this, what you mentioned, having a vacation rental whenever is the season, wherever that market is hot. And once that market cools off, maybe, you know, switch your targeting to corporate rentals. I've never, honestly, you may have said it in one of your talks that I've heard before, but this is the first time I'm actually listening, I guess. But that is genius. I mean, if you're in a slow season, let's say you're in a place where winter time is the hot season, look up the companies around in your area and start targeting those for your audience. So that is a really good tip. I love that.
Well, it really helps. So let's take Florida. I mentioned that one.
Mm-hmm.
When Florida, during the winter, these furnished rentals perform really well because the snowbirds are willing to pay a premium, so they have a house available to them. They're willing to book years in advance, right? And so the wintertime performing short-term rentals do really well. The people who convert into short-term rental during the summer, the numbers are high. The occupancy rate is low. What do I mean by that? Everyone and their mama converts their house into a furnished short-term rental in Florida during the peak seasons, during the high months. The difference is the real money comes from the snowbirds who are willing to book years and years and years out, right? For and they're willing to pay a premium during the winter. That's the true high season for Florida. And it's the opposite of what people suspect. And in some places like Aspen or Vail Village, Colorado, like Vail, the peak season is going to be in the winter, right? That's what everyone's going for. But you mentioned permits, zoning, those things. I think that this is a scary topic for a lot of people. Generally, you can look up what they call, it's like a regulation tab. And it's got the standards, so that's literally the word you're looking for, standards for your community, through the zoning pages. And normally you're going to find the rules for these type of rentals on a PDF document. PDF document that you have to download. So that's what you're really looking for whenever you're trying to find out what's, if it's allowed in your area. But are there any gray zones? What do I mean by that? So maybe your area allows temporary housing. Well, if you can prove that your property only has an occupancy rate of 75-80%, is it temporary? Yeah, it sure is. It very well might qualify for a temporary housing permit, right? What if it's, okay, this is like a golden nugget whenever it comes to short-term rentals. So if you hang on to this, you're going to need it, Tony.
If you're driving, don't take notes, but if you're sitting in a chair, take notes on this, okay?
Right. Ag tourism. Getting an ag tourism license. A lot of people are able to keep multiple. Maybe it's, so someone I know personally, they have, I think she has like 8 rentals on one parcel. It's like 5 acres. And she's got a barn that was there before, and she, like, decorated it. And now it's, like, a place where people can come get pictures or have their wedding there. But she got shut down by the city. They said, you're not allowed to have this kind of operation because we don't allow Airbnbs. She didn't get a permit or anything. What she was able to do, though, was get an ag tourism license. What does that mean? She had the ag part, right? She had to get a, she had to get the license, and then she got a llama. She got some chickens, and now it's part of the people who stay. It's part of their chores to go feed the llama, right? And they love it. So it was a double win. But she was able to get through the barriers because now she's running more of an event venue, not a short-term rental operation. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. A compound. Mm-hmm. She built a compound, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think even if it's short-term rentals are not allowed in your area, don't discredit what you are allowed to do and see how you can make the rules fit for you. Have I seen a lot of success with people going before the board and staking a claim and saying, we're going to make these changes and it's going to be great for the community? No. Those people. I mean, I might see 1 in 10 who actually make that stand be successful at changing the zoning for their areas. But play within the rules, and if playing within the rules don't work, I think it all boils down to this. Go where you're wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Right, go where you're wanted. If you're curious about things, not exactly about zoning, but how much is the lodging tax? Is there a hospitality tax? There's a website for that. It's called mylodgingtax.com. Be willing to give them your email, and in return, you can look up areas, and they'll tell you the total lodging tax. So county, state, city, it'll tell you the total right there. So that's a huge one that I use a lot whenever I was doing more consults, helping people find out what areas they wanted to invest in, right?
Mm. That's good. Great tips. So again, if you didn't take notes while this session was going on, please go back and take notes on this because this is very important. So now let's talk about the automation portion of the short-term rentals. A lot of people are like, oh no, I don't want to do short-term rentals. It's too much work. That was me about a year ago. I was like, you know what? I'm already dealing enough with my tenants now. If I do short-term rental, turnaround is going to be a lot more. So that's not something I want to do. However, in one of the conferences that I watched you speak, I was like, wait a minute, this might actually work. One question and then follow up with the automation. The question is, when you start your short-term rental, should you start automating immediately or should you wait till you have like maybe 1 to 2 properties? When is that point to where you should have a lot of automation and what percentage is that and the involvement with you? I know that was a lot, but
I got you. So let's go back to, when should people start automating? There's a part of me that wants to scream at people and just say, start at the beginning. But I'll tell you, when people have one house and they're paying for all these applications on their phone, they're paying monthly subscriptions, they're like, this house isn't hard to manage. Why do I need all this? It's not about the one house. If you have intentions to grow, it's between the third and fourth house that people become what I refer to as hectic hosts, right? They start losing their mind. And normally whenever I talk to those people, I am presented with two options. Either they're going to sell me their portfolio right there because they are so done, stick a fork in them, they're over it, or I'm going to help them. Like, can I help them or can I buy their portfolio? Because they're tired of it. So one, manageable with no automation, totally doable. Two, you're pushing it, especially if you've got anything like Tony has going on where you're expecting a new baby, right? You've got the golden handcuffs. You've got a W-2 position. If two starts to push it, most people have families that they have to give a lot of attention to. Number three is where people call me. They're like, I need you. I need you. I need your help. So what does the automation look like? So whenever I get a house, I take that property, that furnished rental, and I'm going to plug it into Airbnb and VRBO. And then down here, I've created a system of applications that do different tasks. What do I mean by different tasks? This one's going to respond to all the guests and automate that process. So most guests, they might get 1, 2, 3 messages from their host. My guests, they're going to get like 12 to 15 messages from me. What kind of messages? Well, a thanks for booking message, right? Directions to the property, where to park, right? What the door code is, what day the trash runs, any notifications about the neighborhood that they need to know. Maybe there's construction going on across the week and or across the street. It might be loud throughout the week, right? A departure message. They got a one button click where they click the little link and it sends my cleaner an automated message letting her know that they've checked out, right? And then reminder to leave me a great review. We hope to earn your 5-star review. So you can automate messages. You can automate your calendar with cleaners, meaning I no longer screenshot a picture of my calendar and then send it to the cleaner. Let her tell me, yeah, I can do it. She picks up the cleaning. She goes there. She does her thing. I'm hopeful that she's actually there cleaning. And then at the end, she says, okay, I'm done. I need you to Venmo me my money. And I don't have to do that. I'm not sending them payments manually anymore. All my vendor payments is automated. Inventory, automated. Restocking, automated. I know that sounds like, Alicia, I'm still like living in the carrier pigeon days. How the heck are you? How are you automating delivery and restocking? Yes, there is a way. Auditing your cleaners. You can have applications in place where they're forced, before they can hit complete cleaning, which is the button that pays them, before they leave there, they have to upload a certain number of photos of the property at the end of their cleaning. How does this help you? One, it allows you to audit them. Two, in the event there's a dispute that the guest arrives and says, hey, the place wasn't clean, we were not happy, and they take pictures and send an Airbnb of the bed not being made and stuff, you have timestamped proof of otherwise, because the cleaner sent it to you in the app, right? You can prevent double bookings. What do I mean by that? Well, if you've got one house and maybe you've got 2 Airbnb ads for that same house, yes, that's legal, but do it within the terms of service. And maybe you've got 1 VRBO ad for that same house. Now you got 3 ads out. What if someone books here and someone books here on the same day? You're not going to be jumping back and forth and blocking out the calendar. That calendar is going to be merged together to one iCal. What does iCal mean? It's a basic mathematic algorithm for internet calendars, but you're going to backfeed it all together. And as much as all this sounds like massively confusing, I've made it really, really simple. You download the app, you create your listing, right? You furnish it. You create your listing description, put it on Airbnb, import the Airbnb app. And now that property can actually show up in your apps and it runs like a system. So for me, I have learned that we're able to automate anywhere between 85 and 90% of automated tasks, or I'm sorry, of repetitive tasks. What did that allow me to do? It allowed me to create SOPs, standard operating procedures, because now I had a system. I knew that most of the work was being done by these applications. So knowing the rinse and repeat cycle of when people check out, check in, check out, check in, I could create standard operating procedures, meaning I could train people. So whether that looks like training an in-house person, a co-host, an executive co-host, an office administrator, whoever that is, you can train that person. Or maybe you hire a hospitality team out of the Philippines, right? Virtual assistants, the best virtual assistants come from the Philippines. If you're wondering, how the heck do I find those people? You can do it on Upwork, upwork.com. You can do it through onlinejobs.ph, right? And a lot of these individuals, they're familiar with short-term rentals. They're great virtual assistants, so they're used to this. And they're willing to do it for $4, $5, $6 an hour, right? So it is very possible for you to get away from being engulfed in that business. Normally, it looks like this. The first and second house, people go, I don't need automation. And I'll agree, they don't, as long as they don't grow. They don't need automation as long as they don't grow. If you intend to have more than one, you need to input the automation before you get overwhelmed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Normally, it's between houses, I'm going to say like 5 or 6, through 8, where people can't get out of their own way. Meaning they think they're the only ones who can do it. They're on a hamster wheel every single day. They find themselves half of the time cleaning the properties. I got properties I have not been to since 2019. Like, I've literally, they have great occupancy rates. I have not been there. I don't have to be there. It's all automated. I have cleaners. I have lawn care guys. And I have a co-host, right? And whenever it comes to people of like, Alicia, I don't know any good cleaners. There are ways to find those people. Post it in Facebook groups that you're looking for local cleaners. Create a flyer that's half in Spanish and half in English. And I want you to take that flyer to every motel within, 10 miles of your unit and just walk the halls. Please don't go to the office. They will kick you out. But just walk the halls and hand it to the maids, right? Take those same flyers to all the trailer parks in your area. These are stay-at-home moms who, a lot of times, they're looking for side hustles. They need the money, right? And stay-at-home moms are wonderful cleaners. Why? They had a purpose for their babies between age 0 to 5. Baby went to school, first grade, second grade, third grade. Now mom has no purpose from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. But you know what she is perfect for? Making $85 to $125 between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. because that's the turnover window. Most people check out at 10 a.m. and they check a new reservation checks in at 3 p.m. So that's your target market for quality cleaners, right? Whenever it comes to lawn care guys, who are you looking for? You're looking for somebody who you don't have to remind them to mow your properties. You let them know that during the peak season, X month through X month, wherever you are in the United States, right? Your peak season, that they need to address and mow that property every 10 to 14 days. If you're having to constantly remind that person, he's the wrong person, right? And you also need to get pictures before and after. So I realized I started getting billed for all my properties and several of them hadn't been mowed yet and they got forgotten about, or they just billed me like, oh, it's not bad, we'll just bill her. No, don't bill her for a place you didn't mow. So ask for pictures before and after. And yeah, for auditing your staff, these people, right? If you don't want that to be you, who can you hire? Realtors are often more than willing, in fact, they love to start these properties. So let that person help you actually set up the decor and pick out the decor for the space if that's not in your wheelhouse, not something you're good at. Realtors. How do you find realtors? Literally drive around the neighborhood where your property is and look for whose name is on the sign. That is somebody who's in your area, right? Mobile notaries. These individuals are more than happy to go and restock, drop off supplies, check behind the cleaners if they're a new cleaner, whatever the case may be. Uber drivers, right? You can hire these boots on the ground where it doesn't have to be your boots. And y'all, that's about as big as my team is. I have a co-host. We have 5 cleaners that one of them, I'm going to say that if you have less than 4 or 5 properties or less, you need at least 3 cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But lawn care guys, cleaners, co-hosts, and every now and then you might need a runner. So those are the boots on the ground. And other than that, put in automation, you're off to the races, man.
That's awesome. That's a lot of, I love it. I mean, a lot of tips there that one can take. Now, me personally, I went automation with the one property. And the reason for it is because, again, I was kind of against Airbnb because I did not want it to be as involved. And I told myself, well, one thing that you mentioned, and I think this was in a conference again, I mean, I've listened to you several places. One thing that I took that pushed me to do short-term rental was you mentioned that some of these apps, obviously these apps are not free, or some mm-hmm. of them are not free. And let's say one of them is $30 a month. Mm-hmm. Will you justify you having, for example, let's say it was the text messaging one, not the text, but the automated messages one. Sure. Me typing those messages every single day, every single guest. Is it worth the $30 that I have to pay that app to do that? And is my time worth more than that? And if it is, that was my take. You know, I don't want to sit down and message every single guest for the same exact thing every time. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to pay for the subscription for the $30 a month or whatever that is and go ahead and automate. I mean, that right there was what sold me.
Yes.
I would do this short-term rental.
It is totally worth it. So I just pulled up mine to be able to have relevance to tell you. I have 89 scheduled messages today.
Just today.
89.
That is insane. So imagine yourself typing 89 messages.
No, it's not happening. That's not happening at all. And then for just on the automated messages, I have artificial intelligence too. What does that mean? When people ask me about, hey, can we check in early? My AI picks up and responds to them on my behalf. When people ask about the, what is the Wi-Fi username and password? We can't find it in the house. My AI kicks on and answers for them. So many things. And now I actually am integrated with ChatGPT. ChatGPT has answered the guests and it shockingly sounds just like me. I have the tendency to say, like, yeah, dear, that's fine. Well, that's just a Southern thing. Well, even my ChatGPT has a Southern accent.
Are you telling me there's a robot Alicia Merriman out there somewhere?
Yes, there are several.
Oh, yep. Man.
But yes, I think it's worth it out of the gate. And I get that same pushback, Anthony. Whenever you were first starting, the question is the money worth it? Because I can do it. Okay. If you intend to grow, you should. You need to just go ahead and set it up, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't intend to grow, if this is like a one-off experiment, don't do it yet. Wait till later. But I had to change the way I was thinking about some of these apps. Now, I was the guinea pig. It took me 4.5 months to vet all the automation. I literally have a list. It's called a tech tools list. It's on my website where I vetted 112 different companies and what software they offered for your Airbnb VRBO. And it took me 4.5 months to do that, which means they gave me free trials. I got some of them I had to pay for. They let me do a free onboarding session. I got to meet their ambassadors or the actual developers, right? So that process was a long, drawn out process. And I always went back to like, man, am I willing to pay for one of these things? I realized, would I pay $30 a month for a darn good employee? And this employee don't ask for a raise. It shows up on time every single time, right? It doesn't go on maternity leave. It doesn't go on vacation. It doesn't call out sick. It don't ask for me to brew coffee at the office. I love my apps, and they offer me the ability to have space. I have two jobs left in my business, Tony. Two jobs. And that is to monitor and make decisions. Every Friday, I audit my portfolios. Every Friday. I have not, today, I have not logged on to Airbnb, VRBO, not once. I don't have to. I don't even look at them. I have two jobs, to monitor and to make decisions. And that's it.
And that, as soon as you figure out a way to automate that, you're going to automate that.
I'm done. I will. I think that's called a CFO.
Yeah. Or who knows, your ChatGPT bot can probably.
Yes, that's a great idea. Yeah, I think that's coming from the pipeline, like, realistically.
Yeah, yeah, I believe it. I believe it. In a couple of years, who knows what can come out, right?
Yeah, my ChatGPT, like, the persona I've created with it, it mirrors me. It's a smart aleck sometimes. It tells me straight up no. It tells me, no, I'm not going to do that for you. And I'm like, what? You're a robot.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty interesting.
That is so much good info that came out of this. Leash, now I know you have something that just came out. It's in the works. Do you want to tell people about that, what you got going on?
I will. And I'll also put this little caveat on it. We only have 19 slots available. But I am finally offering this. I am offering a course. And I'm offering it to beta students first. In other words, the beta version. When iPhone first came out, do you think the first version was the best of the best? No. No. Anyone who wants to buy a seat to be a beta student with me, what are the perks they're going to get? Number one, they're going to get lifetime access to every version that I come out with after this beta version. So lifetime access to all updates, all templates, everything that I create forever on. That person is also going to have a one-time luxury that the 2.0 version, the 3.0 version won't have. They get access to me. I have, back in December, I carved out the next 2 months. So the course starts June 28th, 2023, and it goes until August 2nd, okay? I've carved out all that time for these people. In other words, we're having one class once per week. It's a two-hour class where we're going to discuss the topic in depth. And then I'm going to offer two study halls after that. So 2 1-hour study halls is optional to attend. But if you have questions, you can literally come to me with your questions about your property. What do I plan to provide these people? Number one, we're going to analyze their particular property, right? We're going to make sure that they are priced correctly for their area. Are you charging what you're supposed to be charging? Or are you leaving money on the table? Optimizing your listing. I am going to personally go into every one of their listings and make sure that every toggle is clicked correctly, that they are set up correctly, that they have meta tags for SEO optimization, right? I want to make sure that they are being seen on the algorithm in these, on the online travel agencies. It doesn't matter how hard they worked if no one knows they exist, right?
Right.
Then the golden nugget of this course is I'm going to teach people how to automate their portfolio. So if they've got 1, 2, 3, 10, 15, even 20 houses, and they self-manage those properties, and I've had those people, and they're losing their mind, right? Those people, I'm able to show them how to take their houses, plug them into automation, get that going, create standard operating procedures, and now how the heck do you hand off the reins to somebody else? I'm going to hold these people's hand through that process. And we're going to do it in about 6 to 7 weeks. I'll go an extra week if anyone needs that time with me. But yeah, they can find out, anyone listening, you can find out more about that by visiting host, H-O-S-T, hostheadquarters.com. And you have to go directly there, hostheadquarters.com. Or you can look up me, my name, Alicia. You see it right here on the screen, AliciaMerriman.com. You can actually get to it from there as well. But yeah, it's pretty exciting.
It's also going to be in the show notes. So if you're either driving or something, just come back to this episode and it'll be in the show notes. And you said, Alicia, was from June 28th to August what?
August 2nd. Oh, I forgot to mention, the people who joined me as beta members not only did get lifetime access, but one-on-one time with me every single week, but they also get a massive discount from the 2.0 version and 3.0 version.
There you go. And I will say one important thing about having the lifetime access to all the beta ones that you launch. Airbnb, VRBO, and a lot of the short-term rental space changes constantly. I know Airbnb just came out with a new version that changes some of the things for the host. That is important for you to have to stay up to date with the changes, and you can find tips, hacks that you can actually do within. So that is very, very important if you want to get into the short-term rental space. Leash, any tips or things that I missed to ask that you would suggest for the daily real estate investor community that you may think of?
Yeah, I got something for you. If you plan on being in this space, read the terms of service for Airbnb, because if you don't know the rules, you can't play by them and you can't play within them. And you're only going to be able to defend yourself when something goes astray. If this is your money, this is how you support your family. If you don't read the terms of services, you don't know the rules, okay? So that's one. I think leaving the audience with the idea that burnout does not come from not working hard enough. It comes from not seeing an end in sight. Most people who experience burnout, they are working themselves to death. And they keep thinking, if I just work harder, I just work harder. No, that's not it. That will lead you down a bad, a very, very unhealthy road. You have to be able to see the end in sight. There, you have to create an ending, an exit strategy. How do you depart from being on that hamster wheel? Okay.
This has been awesome, awesome stuff. Leash, you already mentioned your website where people can find out more about you. Are you active on the social platforms if anybody wants to see what you do or wants to follow you?
Yeah. So I will give this group my real Facebook. I've got a decoy Facebook. If you look me up, Alicia Merriman, see right here, Alicia Merriman, and then add the word Durbin, D-U-R-B-I-N, Alicia Merriman Durbin. Look me up on Facebook and send me a friend request. That is my real Facebook where you're going to get to know me, all my projects that we're doing. We've been pitched recently for our flipping business to get on HGTV twice. Mm-hmm. They've offered us two pilots for Huntsville Rocket City Renovators and some other Huntsville thing. We turned them down, right? They're like, you got a cute little family and you do all these pretty houses. I'm like, yeah, no. I make plenty of money and I have my peace and sanity and time with my family. I'll keep that. Thanks.
Well, guys, if you're watching us on YouTube, hit that love button, hit that subscribe button if you got some value out of today. Also follow us on social media, Josiah, who's not here, but you can follow Josiah at Daily Real Estate Investor. You can follow me at Ant1234 Moreno, A-N-T-1234 Moreno. But yeah, guys, I appreciate you, Leash. And by the way, Alicia is one of the few that calls me Anthony by my full name. and I call her Leash. Of course, her name is Alicia. That's how you know that's how much we care about each other. I mean, you've been a huge help in my business, not just on the short-term rental side, but everything. I mean, I believe when I first got started investing, you were one of the few people that I saw first. And that gave me some good feedback. So I really appreciate you and everything you do. So yeah, guys, thank you for joining us today. Again, follow on the social platforms and leave us a 5-star rating wherever you're listening to this. So that's the way we grow. So thank you guys very much, and we'll see you on the next episode.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please connect with me on Instagram at Daily Real Estate Investor or via email at josiahsmelser@gmail.com. My new book titled Dream It and Build It, How to Crush Your Real Estate Investing Goals is out. You can get it either in digital or physical format on Amazon. Once you've read the book, please leave me a review. Tune in next time for another episode of the Daily Real Estate Investor as we both join in our financial freedom journey.